This is the Medicast, January 4th, 2010. I want to thank all of you because you've been around for the last 200 episodes of the Medicast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the Medicast, Tuesday, February 7th, 2006.
Hi, Jamie, calling as you get close to episode 200. Awesome job. Looking forward to the next 200. I think I picked you up around episode 8 or 9.
Hi, Jamie. This is Helen from Pasadena. I'm calling you from the Rose Bowl game to congratulate you on your 200th show and looking forward to many, many more.
Hey, this is Miss Parameter from the Gen Med Show. We just wanted to call and say that we love the Medicast very much and we wanted to issue a congrats for the 200th episode. So, Jamie, we love you, and we'll be listening in the future.
Jamie, Matt, longtime listener. I just want to thank you for everything you've done for the show. Happy 200th episode. It's been a great help to me in all of my studies. Could not have passed my basic class without it. Could not have passed my intermediate without it. And looking forward to using it when I go to paramedic school.
Hi, Jamie. This is Oliver Winter from Germany. I'm listening to your podcast for about a year now. And I would like to say congratulations for your 200th podcast, and keep going. It's really a blast.
Jamie, this is Greg Fries from EverydayEMSTips.com and TheEMSEducast.com. I just wanted to call and congratulate you on reaching your 200th episode. I've always admired the Medicast for a couple reasons. First and foremost, the focus that you've always had on students and new professionals and giving them tools and tips and resources and ideas to help them succeed as new EMS professionals. So thank you for that. The second thing I admire is just the fact that you've started this 200 episodes ago and probably not totally sure where you're going with it, but that you've stuck with it and grown a very loyal audience and that you continue each week to deliver content that's useful to lots of people in lots of places. And along the way, you've certainly made a lot of great friends. I'm proud to be among them, and I just want to congratulate you and say I appreciate the work that you're doing with the Medicast. Let's look forward to another 200 episodes.
Hi, Jamie. This is Paul Bond from Emergency Nursing Today. I just wanted to say congratulations on producing your 200th episode of the Medicast. You have been and continue to be an inspiration to many, not only in the field of emergency services, but in podcasting and education. I'm proud to count you among my friends and to have you as my mentor for my podcast. Keep up the great work, and here's to another year of great shows.
Hey, Jamie, Rick from Mitigation Journal. Congratulations on your 200th episode, and best wishes for 200 more.
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Yep, here it is, big episode 200, and I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, welcoming all of you to this almost the beginning of 5 years here in the business of podcasting for EMS, and I just want to thank all of you who sent in emails, Facebook letters and notes, Twitter notes, and of course all the voicemails. That's a selection of some of the many voicemails I got, especially from some of the great podcasting friends I've made. A couple of them I've helped get started in podcasting, and I appreciate they count me among a mentor in that regard. But you know, really, they bring the content and the material to podcasting, and I was happy to be able to enable them to do that because I think it enriches all of us. I'm planning on another 200 episodes. We'll see where we go from here as we roll on into year five here in the Medicast. And my commitment to you is I'll continue to put out a show here just about every week, and we will continue to push forward in bringing news, information, and education to the EMS community at all levels. And just remember, I count all of you as part of the Medicast community, and hope that you will continue to support the show with your emails, with your comments on the MedicCast blog, spreading the word to your friends, your instructors, your officers, your supervisors, and your employees and medics on the street. We need to make sure that people find resources, not just the MedicCast, but great shows like the EduCast, great shows like the new Gen Med Show, Rick Rosati's show, the Emergency Nursing Today show by Paul Bond, a great emergency resource. All of those shows, plus many others, are available out there. And I just want to tell all of you that this is just part of a huge, vast group of resources. Don't forget, you can find out more over at medicast.com/blog. And of course, you'll find links in the show notes there, links to everything we talk about in each and every episode. All 200 episodes are there. You just need to go and search for them, go back in time and check out past episodes if you need to find additional information. And that's always going to be there, at least as far as I can see in the near future. Also, don't forget, you can reach me by email, podmedic@mac.com, and call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC, with your comments, suggestions, corrections, whatever you need. This is all a community effort, folks, and I really appreciate everything you've done to help me along here for the last 200 episodes. Don't forget, also, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter and places like that, usually under the handle PodMedic, so that's easy to find, facebook.com/PodMedic, twitter.com/PodMedic, and don't forget, there's a MedicCast fan page. We're on the push for 1,000 fans. When we get 1,000 fans, we're able to do some things for our fan page that we can't do until we get 1,000 fans, so let's continue that push. We're almost to 500, and you can add into that. Go ahead and become a fan of the MedicCast on the Facebook fan page. You'll find links on the MedicCast blog right on the front page. Just click that link and say, yes, I want to be a fan, and it'll add that to your Facebook fan page list. And it's a great way to keep track of things. I release episodes early on occasion when I record things earlier in the week, and you also get access to other special things and videos. So you definitely wanted to be a member of the MedicCast Facebook fan page. Time to jump into some listener fan mail, emails, and that's because it's really important to the show all through the last 200 episodes to answer emails, respond to your questions, your comments, suggestions, corrections, whatever you send in. This has always been a community effort, and I want to thank all of you. I'll start off with an email I got from listener Gerald. Gerald checked in to say he enjoys the podcast and wants to check in. He received his EMTB national certification back in the summertime and has been doing some other things, but now looking for employment in the Los Angeles area. Wanted to know about some ideas on how one goes about getting a job in the EMS field. And it's something that never really comes up in your EMT courses, as he points out in his email. You know, Gerald, I'll completely agree with that. I think that one of the things you can do is every community is different. And so what goes on in the Los Angeles area is different from what happens here. I know in my region, since there's so many volunteer services, a lot of people get their EMT as a volunteer and then decide they'd like to work in that field in a professional capacity. Well, professional paid capacity, I should say, because of course, professional doesn't just mean you get paid. But it does generally, in my region, they start with local interfacility transport services, where or working for some company that maybe is dealing with having a wheelchair van for taking people to things like dialysis treatments and stuff like that. Those kind of transport services are great starting blocks. Also, when you do interfacility transport, while it's not the emergency ideas that we think about when we get into the EMS field, where we're dealing with dispatch to ongoing and recently happened emergencies, we should remember that interfacility transport is a great opportunity for you to see a variety of patients with a lot of different issues, learn to read charts, and learn some of the medical knowledge and lingo that goes on with a lot of our patients, and a great time and place to answer a lot of questions when you're just getting started. So, you know, look forward to that kind of opportunity. The other thing is, when you're looking in your region, you really need to like talk to the people that are in the jobs you want to have. So develop a rapport, make a relationship with someone where you can ask those questions. Go in and say, look, can I bend your ear for 5 minutes? And don't make it any longer than that, but ask them how they recommend getting started, because it is so different from region to region. And use that knowledge to get yourself and get your foot in the door. Some places may say, yeah, get started as a volunteer and in certain capacities in community activities, perhaps working as a volunteer for some kind of local festivals or things like that, and then work your way as you get to be known as someone who's reliable and knowledgeable, you can get a job that way. So that's another opportunity and idea for you. For anybody else out there listening to the show, I'd love to hear your comments. Again, call into that voicemail line, 941-306-3342, or you can send an email in. Let's share your thoughts on a good way to get started in the EMS career field with Gerald. And I would also recommend you check out something we did recently, earlier in the year in 2009, with the EMS boot camp with Greg Fries and Jim Huffman. And I helped them out with some things on getting started in the jobs and in a career and as an EMS provider working with them. And they have some information on that that they've put together over there as well. And that's emsbootcamp.com. So you can check out some of the things they have available as well. Hope that helps. And Gerald, I look forward to hearing back from you in the future. Remember to stay in touch here with the MedicCast. I also got an email in from listener John talking about a discussion we had on running lights and sirens in a recent episode, and he just wanted to share his two cents worth. He enjoys the show, but he's not a medic and involved in EMS, but he likes listening to the show as a member of the public and understanding some of the issues we deal with. And he just wanted to say that it's a great way to maintain visibility with the local fire departments, and he says that at nighttime when traffic is light and they run lights and sirens, it can be something that keeps them in the minds of the public as they working in the community and understand what's going on. People that work jobs and don't understand that maybe those sirens keep the providers awake. When you're running long 24-hour shifts, maybe that siren and the window down and helps keep you awake. You know, that might be something that happens, John, but we'd like to think that people are getting enough rest and don't need the siren to keep them awake. And, of course, hearing loss can be an issue if you live around sirens too long and you're not protecting yourself. But I do appreciate your comments, and it's important for all of us to remember that we should be using our lights and sirens according to our local protocols and our state laws regarding emergency vehicle operation. And if your laws say you're supposed to be running lights and sirens, or that if your lights are on, your siren must be blaring, or vice versa, then definitely you need to maintain whatever you're doing with inside your local protocol and your state laws and local regulations. So it's important to listen to what I say in some respects, but also to make sure you're following your own local protocols. And I think that's very important too. John, thanks for your email and thanks for listening to the show. I always love to hear from members of the public that are listening to the MedicCast and hearing what you're getting out of the show as well. I also got an email back from listener David checking in to thank me for mentioning the upcoming East Hampton Village Ambulance Service Conference coming up in East Hampton, New York. This is coming up on January 30th. It's a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with speakers like Dan Limmer, Joe Mistovich, and Paul Werfel. And, you know, this is an opportunity for you to really get access to some great speakers, and it's being paid for out of their budget. So it's free to attendees or very low cost to attendees. You can find out more information, email me here, and I will put you in touch with David, or you can check in directly at the East Hampton Village Ambulance Service at East Hampton, New York, and check in with them and find out more about this conference coming up on January 30th, on Saturday, January 30th. And I love to talk about these things. Don't forget, you can always try to get me or some other speakers that are podcasters in to talk about other ways of learning, opportunities, and avenues of education online, and you can find out more by contacting me or talking to people like Greg Fries, Chris Montero, or some of the other EMS podcasters out there. Let's jump into this week's news, and I want to lead off with a story I found from the South Dakota Star Tribune. I'm sorry, Minneapolis St. Paul, Minnesota Star Tribune, but it's talking about some updated information and some services that are dealing with therapeutic hypothermia, using the concepts of hypothermia for patients that are coming back and being resuscitated from cardiac arrest and using that therapeutic hypothermia to improve their outcome and help them hopefully have better chances to live to walk out of the hospital at the other end of the cardiac arrest event. This is a great article talking about this. I know a lot of you have asked about this, and I will be covering this in an upcoming episode, trying to get an expert on to talk a little bit about this. And I have someone in mind. Amy Turley from the Turley Backboard Pad is a great person to talk about this. It's one of the things her product does very well, is assist in therapeutic hypothermia. And unfortunately, we've just had scheduling conflicts. So as soon as I get squared away with Amy, we will be having her on the show to do a special segment talking about therapeutic hypothermia. And I want to encourage all of you to keep an ear out for that on an upcoming episode. I hope to get that scheduled sometime in the next month or two. She and I have kind of tentatively put something together for the end of this month in January. So hopefully we'll have that recording done and I can get it into an episode in February or March and have it here for you on the show. But this particular article talks about a physician in South Dakota who is one of the growing number of people who have survived sudden cardiac arrest because they had access to an ambulance and an emergency department that utilized therapeutic hypothermia, and that this is one of those miracle on ice things, as this article points out, using things like chemical ice packs to cool the patient and using some other commercial technology to help cool the patient down. And it's really exciting to see this kind of thing coming together. And I hope to see more of this as more services adopt this protocol. They will have the ability to make it available to all of their patients in all of their communities. This is something that you should look into. If your service is using it, I'd love to hear from you. What products are you using? What technologies are you using to get this done? How do you monitor the level of hypothermia you're inducing? I think that's one of the challenges, is how do you make it uniform and within therapeutic guidelines without just chilling the patient and freezing them? And there's a fine line there, so we need to make sure that we're taking care of this appropriately. But I urge you to follow the link in the show notes just to look at this article. And again, you know, this is a great example of getting your service out there in front of the community and educating your public about what you do. Next up is an article I found looking at a new potential treatment for patients that have hepatitis C. It's a new drug that is being tested, and they're preparing for human testing, but it's being tested right now on hepatitis C and how it can be administered to patients, where it actually blocks the replication of hepatitis C virus in the body's cells. If we remember, a virus is not like a bacteria. Bacteria can replicate itself. A virus has to go into our cells and then replicate there, where it's then released into the body where it infects other cells. Hepatitis C targets the liver, and this is where you cause liver failure and ongoing liver problems with patients. And it's one of the more insidious bloodborne pathogens, which a lot of us learn about every year in our annual bloodborne pathogen update, which is, I think all of us can agree, among the most boring things we do. But anyway, it's something that I think is really exciting, because anybody who's been around in medical services for any length of time knows that hepatitis C is one of those things that has been particularly debilitating to the healthcare communities for those that have experienced exposures, needle sticks, things like that. And it's one of those things that, while hepatitis C is very prevalent among the IV drug user marketplace, a lot of patients that some people would say should expect to be contracting diseases, the healthcare community is not one of those people. We should be protecting ourselves and do the best to protect ourselves. But many, many excellent providers, nurses, doctors, EMS personnel contracted hepatitis C over the years. And this drug offers not necessarily a cure, but it does greatly reduce viral levels in the patient and seems to make the virus more susceptible to other antiviral drugs. And so it could be part of a cure for hepatitis C. We'll have to see how this works out, but I just wanted to point this out to you. And if you know of someone or have interest in understanding more about bloodborne pathogens like hepatitis C, you might want to check out this article that I included in the show notes from medicinenet.com. Really good information and an exciting new treatment for hepatitis C. Finally, I'd like to wrap up with a story I found over at WebMD.com. This is a report from a study from the UK evaluating nearly a million women, including 240,000 women who had recent surgeries, and found this study found that the risk for post-operative blood clot formation was much higher than people previously thought, than experts in the medical community previously thought. Now, if you know, my wife had a pulmonary embolism that cropped up as a result of a DVT, deep vein thrombosis, a blood clot that she had had, was not related to a surgical procedure, but it led me to do a series of episodes on blood clots, on pulmonary embolism recently. And I just want to point out to you that, you know, okay, why do we need to know about post-op blood clot risk? Well, this comes back to all of us focusing on getting a good history on our patients. And one of the questions we should be asking is, have you had any recent medical procedures or surgeries? And the reason for that is a lot of patients we see more and more are doing outpatient surgical procedures. These patients are in the hospital for minimal amounts of time and sent home to recuperate. And I don't disagree with that because I think that keeps costs down. And I think, honestly, patients recover better at home. They aren't getting pestered every 3 or 4 hours for vital signs. They aren't getting woken up by their neighbor in their shared hospital room, the noise and everything in the hospital and not being at home just makes it difficult to rest and therefore difficult to heal. But it also means that we are more likely to have a patient who's recently had a procedure and developed a blood clot. And we, as the people who are on the first front lines of this type of thing, need to be knowledgeable about what we do and understand that we need to ask the right questions and find out more about what has happened with the patient recently in their medical history. And when we hear that they've had a recent post-op, recent operative procedure that could be putting them at risk for blood clot, we should keep that in the back of our mind as a possible cause of respiratory distress, possible cause of leg pain if they've developed a DVT, possible cause of chest pain if they have developed a pulmonary embolism along with that respiratory distress. So keep these things in mind, and it's important to read articles like this and then think, how can you apply them to your field? How can we apply them to dealing with patients in the field? And I think that this is a good example of how to do that, taking something from the hospital setting, from the general medical setting and research, and applying it back to EMS and helping us to provide better care for our patients. Time for this week's tip of the week. And this week we're going to be talking about cardiac arrest management in the field. And let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be covering in this particular episode. We're going to be talking about code teams. And this is something that is used a lot in the hospital setting, and I think it's something we need to think about more as a team approach in the field of cardiac arrest management in the EMS sector. We need to start off with strong BLS skills. This is something that's been hammered into our heads over the last 4 or 5 years from the American Heart Association or whatever your CPR guideline basis is, but I think it's true. We need to maintain strong BLS skills. We'll talk a little bit about that. Also, leadership traits. We're going to cover a little bit more in depth about some of the key rhythm identification tips, and we're going to talk about the different tasks for the code team and understanding exactly what needs to be done and who can do which jobs. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about a very important part that I think is often glossed over, and that's the debriefing. We talk about debriefing from critical incident stress, but I think we can also debrief after things like cardiac arrest events and any critical event as a team member so that we can do better the next time. Let's start off with strong BLS skills. We really need to have a strong basis, which of course means we all need to maintain our CPR certifications, which we all do. So you need to have a current CPR card. But we need to also remember focusing on compressions. Strong, deep, forceful compressions at the right rate and at the right compression depth. All are very important. It's something that I, as a CPR instructor, focus on, and something that we should all keep in mind. And this means that, because this is such a basic part of this, that anybody that's trained in CPR can be part of the team that focuses on maintaining strong BLS skills and maintaining a focus on those skills during the cardiac arrest event. It doesn't have to be the paramedic in charge. It can be anybody with training, and just tell them, hey, I want you to watch compressions. That's something we'll talk about a little bit later on in leadership. We want to limit the number of interruptions and the length of time for those interruptions. Anybody that wants to look back at the understanding from discovered and put forth in the 2005 guidelines from the American Heart Association understands limiting interruptions is key, and getting back on the chest quickly, staying off the heart for less than 10 seconds. So this is something, again, that is a BLS skill and something that can be accomplished very easily, but I think is still overlooked too often. Resume CPR immediately after defibrillation. And this is very important. We need to get back on that heart. We talked about limiting interruptions, but we don't check for pulses after any defibrillation event, any shocks. We want to go back and start CPR again immediately and not check for a pulse or presence of a resuscitation rhythm until after 2 minutes of CPR, about 5 cycles. What about some of the key leadership traits? Leadership is so important, but we talk about leadership, but we don't often do much to develop leadership. So let's look at what a good leader in a cardiac arrest situation is. You have to have confidence in your skills. And when I talk about leadership here, it's important for you to understand I mean leadership at all levels. It means that from the person who's the brand new assistant on the ambulance, an EMT trainee on the ambulance, you can be a leader at your skill level. You can recognize what's right and what's wrong based on your level of training. You have CPR training. That CPR training is the same CPR training I teach to doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, physical therapists, EMTs, paramedics, everybody. They get the same class. And so you need to remember that your skill level at CPR is the same as everybody else's as far as being able to be confident in your skills and recognize when something needs to happen. So this can be leadership at any level, and anyone can step forward and be a leader during the cardiac arrest event. I'm not just talking about the paramedic in charge during a cardiac arrest. But again, focus on your own assigned tasks. Don't get distracted by what else is going on around you. It's going to be the paramedic in charge's job to have that 10,000-foot view, that step back and look at the whole picture and decide what needs to be done next or how something needs to be accomplished. And that's their job. So focus on what you're doing. If you're in charge of doing compressions, do the best darn compressions you can do. If you get tired, be a leader and say, I'm tired. Somebody else needs to step in. That's what leadership means, and that means focusing on what you're doing and what can be done better in what you're doing. Understand the process. This is very important, and again, this happens at all levels, but understand some of the basic ideas and concepts around cardiac arrest management. This is something that will come easier with time, but it's something that you can focus on while you are in the midst of a cardiac arrest as well. Think about what's going to happen next so that when your assigned task has a new part to put in place, you can do that. And this may be someone in charge of airway management may need to be prepared to assist with getting that bag mask attached to an ET tube. It means popping the bag mask portion off the bag and getting that bag ready to go back onto the ET tube. Or recognizing that an endotracheal intubation attempt is not being successfully accomplished, and be prepared to jump back in there and ventilate that patient again quickly so that another attempt can be made. These are all important parts, and you need to understand the process so that you know what needs to be done next, at least in part. Speak up, step in, take charge. I say this again because I think it's important. Leadership happens at all stages and all levels. And if no one else is stepping up to take charge, then it might be the least trained person that needs to step in there and say, let's get CPR started. I know it sounds stupid, but sometimes there's a whole lot of standing around and scratching our butts that happens when we roll up on an emergency. A leader recognizes that something needs to get done and gets it done. If you see something that's going wrong, if you see that an IV line is pulled out, speak up, step in, take charge, say, hey, we've got an IV line that got pulled. Or, hey, we've got some, you know, somebody's touching the patient, we're getting ready to shock. You can be a leader if you recognize a dangerous situation or a problem in progress, speak up and step in, take charge of what you see and say, this needs to be changed. Let someone who's got a higher skill level figure out how to solve the problem. But if you see something at any skill level, you need to step in and make sure that you speak up about it. Finally, respect for other team members. And this goes hand in hand with the speaking up portion. When you speak up, step in, and take charge, you need to do so respectfully. You know, a leader leads. That means, you know, a leader is somebody who brings other people along with them. They don't push them from behind. And I think that that's something you need to keep in mind. And you do that by leading respectfully. At any level, we are part of a team. And a team does not speak disrespectfully to each other. We try to teach each other what's going on and what needs to be done and treat each other with respect when we do that. Let's talk a little bit about rhythm identification. Of course, we can't treat cardiac arrest if we don't know what the heck's going on. If you have an AED that may do this for you at the BLS level, but at the ALS level, it's going to fall on you, the ALS provider, to identify these rhythms and make a determination about how we're going to move forward with treatment. Obviously, you're going to need to have an ACLS certification to do this, an advanced life support level of care, and that can be different in different communities, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that. It's important for you to review common arrhythmias. This is increasingly important if you're in a low-volume area, if you live in a rural area where you as a provider might only see one or two cardiac arrests a year. You need to review your common arrhythmias, review your ACLS protocols and certification information regularly, more frequently than someone in a busier service might need to. And you know what? That's part of your professionalism as a provider. So make sure you're doing that. Remember, we need to look at our shockable rhythms. What can we shock? Our VFib, our pulseless VTAC, our unshockable rhythms, our PEA, our pulseless electrical activity, our asystoles. Of course, you know, if you're on television, you can shock asystole, and that's why I scream at the TV all the time when medical shows are on. Flatline, let's shock them! Well, we can all scream at the TV together, but we do need to remember that asystole is an unshockable rhythm and include that in our review. Non-arrest rhythms, tachycardias, bradycardias, AV blocks. We need to understand how to recognize these arrhythmias, how they are supposed to be treated under our ACLS or advanced life support cardiac protocols. And this is something that you need to review regularly, no matter how busy you are. But again, if you're in a slow system, you need to be reviewing these things more frequently. Don't forget to use mnemonics. There's great tools out there. I always recommend ACLS.net. You can head over there and check that out. But review the mnemonic devices. Use the tools taught to you by your instructors or by your classmates or your friends, or share these with other people if you have some that help you remember your protocols and your arrhythmias. And so I would just, you know, refer you to that. But use those tools to help you remember. Code team tasks. This comes down to who are members of the team when you get to the scene. In the EMS sector, this could be a lot of different people that fulfill these tasks. In many cases, it may be one person fulfilling multiple roles on the team, but we should try to make sure that all parts of the team tasks are accomplished. The team leader. It's going to be usually the highest trained person there in a training or educational setting. This may not be the case. The instructor may let the preceptee handle the cardiac arrest if they feel they're ready for it. There's no time like the present to learn these things. But again, that team leader is going to be among the highest trained people in the room. There can be a recorder. This is somebody who is going to record what's going on in the event. when were meds given? What time were they given? How much was given? When did we see a change in rhythm? And we need to mark and note that in some way. This recorder can be really anyone, somebody educated at the BLS level or above. It could be a member from a local engine company that responds to assist with cardiac arrest. They just need to have a pen and paper and record things. And this is something that should be set up ahead of time with your local agencies. If you're going to respond together, say to them, hey, we're going to need a recorder when you show up. Can you have somebody designated to do that job? And this could be someone who can keep track of this information and then pass it on to the ambulance providers as they leave the scene so that they have it for their information when they go to write their reports. Medications. It's a lot easier if someone else is drawing up medications ahead of time so that they can be administered per protocol when the time comes. A lot of the meds, as we know, if you're an ALS provider, you know a lot of these meds are administered 3 to 5 minutes apart, but a lot is going on in that 3 to 5 minute time frame. You might be the only ALS provider present or one of two ALS providers present, and you're trying to get an airway established, you're trying to get an IV established, or you're trying to get an IO insertion done, and you've got just a minute or two to do that, and you've got to give the next medication. So let's have somebody else, if you have someone available to do that, draw up the medications and have them ready so they're just handing them to someone to then check quickly and then go ahead and administer via IV, via IO, or via the ET tube. An airway manager, and this could be a BLS or an ALS provider. If you have a patient who's just getting started in running the code, you can have a BLS person handle this. It just requires somebody with good bag valve management technique, and that they should be confident in how to use a bag mask. They should also be confident and able to get someone to help them with that bag mask. A two-person bag mask technique is a great way to effectively manage a cardiac arrest airway prior to advanced tube insertion. And it can often manage that airway so that we don't have to be worried about that tube very early in the code. We should be focusing on our BLS before ALS, and this is one of those cases where if you have a good airway manager in place, you can kind of remove that worry from your mind and do those things later on in the process. CPR team. These are your BLS providers, your bystanders, anybody around, because we all know cardiac compressions is a vigorous and tiring process, and we should have a pool of people to fill in and swap out so that at least if you have two people, you can swap people in and out so that the person doing compressions isn't getting fatigued over time. That every 2 to 3 minutes, you should be swapping out compressions providers. And the CPR team is where that comes from. And if you look at this concept of team management, you get an idea of how everyone has a specific role to focus on and a specific role to play. And all of these people are key and very important parts of the process. And by each of them having a specific role in a specific area in which they're in charge, we can get a lot more done more efficiently. Finally, the team debrief. You've gotten the cardiac arrest patient to the hospital. You've turned over care. Hopefully, there's been a return of circulation and you've had a successful resuscitation, or maybe not. But what about debriefing your team? It's often a neglected portion of the process, I think, because we just don't think about it. We're getting on to the next call. But I really believe that even a 5-minute quick debrief with the people that were involved in the cardiac arrest can go a long way towards making your next resuscitation event more successful and more smoothly operated and handled. And so it's very important. It's important for quality assurance and quality improvement processes. It's important for finding out if mistakes were made, and so you can document them effectively. This should be a learning environment and not a disciplinary or discipline-based environment, but we need to focus on, all right, everybody should be included, and you should say, what can we do better? What did we not do well? What can we improve on? What did we miss? These are all questions that can be asked, and everyone from the top to the bottom should be included, because remember, we're encouraging everyone to have a leadership role within their job task. And that means that as leaders within their job role, they should have input into how that role can be better handled. There may be ways to improve getting a patient packaged and out of a home or out of the scene and into the ambulance that can be improved. But how are you going to know that if everybody doesn't bring it up? And this is how we do it. We do a debrief and you say, what can we do better? And they say, you know, I figured out that we really need to do something about clearing furniture and making sure we have a clear pathway before we start rolling down the hallway, because of course we aren't doing effective compressions when we're rolling out the door like that. And that's true. So how do we improve that? Well, you find out about it through a debrief, and then you focus on it the next time you have an arrest event. These are all things that can be done. This team process can be practiced. This can be incorporated into your training program. So I want you to think about it in those terms. If you're a training officer or help out with training, it is a great way to do some practice sessions on cardiac arrest management by doing some kind of a team effort. Using these team things, you kind of go over this process with them ahead of time, spend 10 or 15 minutes talking about the team approach and the different jobs, give them some handouts, and then go and manage some sample arrests. Go put together some scenarios for them, let them actually run the arrest with the equipment they're actually going to use, put them in some unusual situations. You know, people always collapse in the bathroom at the back of a long, narrow hallway. So find one somewhere and use that so that they can try to figure out how they're going to handle this and get the patient out of there. Great way to do this, and I urge you to follow up on that. And then again, debrief them after, even in the training session, because you will learn things in the training session that will help you when the real life events occur. There's some excellent links in the show notes. I urge you to follow up on them, both from the American Heart Association talking about arrest management technique, and also some excellent articles I found at emsresponder.com, a two-part article, one on BLS management, one on ALS, cardiac arrest management. And I would urge you to follow up on those links and really get a good look at some of other ideas out there about cardiac arrest management. Hey, that's going to wrap up this 200th episode of the Medicast. I want to thank all of you all for being part of the Medicast community for the last 4 years, going on 5 years now, and I'm just excited about the next 100 episodes of the Medicast. It is exciting to be part of the community. I don't think I really thought about where this was going when I got started, and yet it's gone so far, and I'm so excited about what is yet to come from the Medicast. If you'd like to get in touch with me, of course, head over to medicast.com/blog. The Medicast blog is your resource for the show notes for this episode. There's a show notes link right there at the top of the page. Click on that and you can find the most recent episode, and then going back in time, see all of the other episodes. Leave comments on each of the articles on the site, or you can send me an email. Contact me by email to podmedic@mac.com, send those emails in, or call in on the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. It's always great to hear from you, especially on the voicemail line. So take a moment, call in on the voicemail line, put that in your phone, 941-306-3342, and then when you're listening to the show, and it's safe to do so, call in and leave a comment about something you just heard, if it occurs to you. It's great to hear from you, and it helps me figure out what to put in future episodes. Don't forget, you can also become a friend over at Facebook, and that's facebook.com/podmedic, or via Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. And always, you can also become a fan of the Facebook page, and you'll find a link on the Medicast blog to go directly to that page and become a fan there. It's a great way to support the show, and you can also leave comments over there as well. Time to wrap up this 200th episode of the show. I'll do so with PodSafe music, as always. This is a song by Samuel Ventura called Strawberry Soda. If you like what you hear, you can check it out over at his site. I have a link in the show notes. And of course, there's also a link there to pick up his music at iTunes. A great way to support these independent artists, to thank them for sharing their music with podcasters like myself. You know, spend 99 cents or so, go over and buy their song over at iTunes. It's a great way to show them you appreciate their time and help them out here on the show. And that's a great way to do that. You'll find a link in the show notes for that as well. Without further ado, I want to remind all of you, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, hopefully here for another 200 episodes. And in the meantime, Don't forget, folks, scene safety, BSI. Pick a star from the big and black sky. Make a wish, but don't aim too high. Expectations leave you waiting round. I've been waiting, being pretty patient. Known invitations, pouring champagne. And this girl's gonna make me lose my mind. And then I wrote her, told her to come over. We'll drink Coca-Cola, strawberry soda. And we'll talk about our stupid lives. My life's been exactly how my night's been. A little loner, but I feel alright when I get around to pouring myself a drink.
Gotta make plans. When it's hard to stand, I hold your tiny hands. Tell you how much you mean to me. Let me make stands. You always gotta make plans. When it's hard to stand, I hold your tiny hands. Tell you. Nothing ever seems to go my way.